300 migrants died in a shipwreck this month. EU leaders also agreed on a mandate on possible strikes in Libya to destroy boats used to transport refugees. The UN Security Council may decide on whether the move would be legal.
France is investigating claims that its peacekeeping forces sexually abused children in the Central African Republic, with a leaked report saying victims as young as 8 were targeted. The abuse is alleged to have occurred between December 2013 and June 2014 at a centre for displaced people. In a statement released on Wednesday, France's defence ministry said it had known about the allegations since the end of July 2014 and a UN probe had been conducted. Investigations by Paris prosecutors are still ongoing. One UN official was suspended over the report's release.
In Nigeria, the army has confirmed that none of the Chibok girls were among those rescued on Tuesday from Boko Haram militants. Earlier in the day, the military said it had rescued some 200 girls and 93 women from northeast.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
I think Angry Indian is one of those people who likes to walk up to two guys and say, "Let's see you and him fight."
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the Angry Indian, and we're in studio, in the virtual studio, with activist Rebecca Pierce. You can find her on Twitter at @aptly_engineered. We're going to link to it here. She's a San Francisco-based filmmaker and journalist, and we both have had some thoughts about the recent Prager University video by Chloe Valdery. I mentioned at the last dispatch that it was probably the slickest anti-African, anti-progressive propaganda I've seen in a long time, because it really puts you in a position. If you are progressive, if you're of color, if you're even really in a lot of ways undecided, and you're simply trying to understand what caused the outbreak of violence in Baltimore over these past days, I mean, we're finding out now that it was a spy plane flying overhead. I mean, this is what they do in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're doing this here in the continental, you know, lower 48. So we really need to be asking ourselves some questions about how propaganda is being used, especially on social media. Because when you look at this video, for those of you, I mean, you remember the audio from last dispatch, but when you know, we did link to it. When you look at the video, it is pretty clear that it was strictly made for social media. It was not made for mainstream television. This was not going to end up in the print media. They knew that this was going to be spread on Twitter and Facebook. So, you know, because it's a video and it has visuals that are pretty questionable and what have you, this, you know, pretty much flies right into the lap of what the far right, what the very racist elements of the Republican Party, which, you know, you have to say the entire Republican Party for the simple fact that the Republican Party as itself, as its leadership, is not saying anything about this. And Prager University has a really shady history, and I'm learning more and more every day. So, you know, I want to bring in Ms. Pierce to, you know, to add some insight to this, because I'm not the only person who was disturbed by what happened. And Ms. Pierce, you know, thank you for, you know, being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, you know, tell us what your first impressions, your later impressions of this, and how this is going to affect how the uprising in Baltimore is being dealt with by the authorities and by the general population here in the United States.
Yeah, so my initial reaction to the video was that it seems to be, like, really a reaction against some of the support that we're seeing for Baltimore protesters and Ferguson protesters. And while, you know, I was able to sort of engage, you know, Chloe online and sort of talk to her about, you know, why is this video seeming to conflate the rioters with protesters, she really denied that that conflation was being made. But from what I saw in the imagery that accompanied her sort of narration on the video, there was, you know, images where you had rioters and protesters basically being shown in the same place at the same time, and all appearing to be like robbing a liquor store. And for me, that's really, you know, actually quite racist imagery that conflates anyone who's talking about Black Lives Matter with, you know, mass destruction and mayhem that's fueled by vice. And so for me, that was a big red flag, because it's basically, while on the surface it's claiming to only address the rioters, it seems to be really addressing anyone who's like angry at this moment in time when people have very legitimate reasons to be angry.
Well, yeah, I mean, this young man, you know, despite what he might have done, and it turns out at that moment, at that particular second, he wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. That he was guilty for looking a white police officer directly in the eye.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for those who are old enough to remember, like I am, that was, you know, considered disrespectful. And you would be punished. Mm-hmm. I remember having been punished for doing this, you know, but not to the degree that this young man has. His neck was broken, his larynx was crushed, his spine was, you know, destroyed in eight different areas. So, you know, there's really no excusing this. And for those who fly around Twitter, those who follow me on Twitter, at The Angry Indian on Twitter, you'll see some of the troll battles I've been getting into, where there are people insisting, and they're using the Baltimore Uprising and Baltimore Riot hashtags, and the Black Twitter hashtags for that matter, to push, you know, racist propaganda that Freddie Gray purposely did this to himself, that he kept bashing himself into the van to break his own neck, to crush his own larynx, and to break his spine in eight different places. And he did this to himself. We had a case recently, well, we have a recent case where a black woman was killed, and supposedly she shot herself while she was handcuffed behind her back. And we had another young man, and please forgive me, listeners, for not remembering this young man's name, because there's so many, who was searched twice, was handcuffed with two sets of handcuffs behind his back after being body searched twice and managed to shoot himself in the head. You know, how much more is the black community supposed to take? And then we look at the outburst that went down in Baltimore. How much is the black community supposed to absorb?
Yeah.
Before, you know, we get to the point where, you know, people are just angry and they're not thinking, and they will strike out like this because they're being pushed. And I do want to bring this up too before you respond, that Mother Jones at motherjones.com, I advise all of our listeners to go over there and check out their reportage on this. They have found from the teachers and the other administrators in the local school system that the bus service, the only transportation for many of these children, was blocked. It was stopped. And that, you know, when the children left the school, they were surrounded by police officers. And if it was more than two of them, you know, at a time together, they were basically being threatened by these police officers. And then one thing led to another. So, you know, I'm sorry for that, but I do want that to get out, because a lot of people are not aware that Mother Jones is really on top of this story in terms of what actually caused the riots. But, yeah. You know, back to, you know, what is the black community supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people are in a really difficult position. And I can personally speak a little bit more about Ferguson, the Baltimore, because I happen to have been in the area visiting my family there when that happened. But people were already under so much pressure. And then this horrible incident with Mike Brown happens and the cops completely crack down on people. You know, it was really clear to me that what was already a volatile situation was going to get out of hand, precisely because people weren't being given any other option. And I think, you know, something that's interesting, just going back to this video, is that you hear this claim being made that the facts don't matter. Well, Black people in this country are very used to waiting for the facts because we're used to hearing this argument. And I think with Mike Brown, it became really clear that, like, the facts we were presented with by the police initially, the facts that were presented to the grand jury, a lot of them were false. And in the case of Baltimore, this this narrative where the police, you know, left out a stop when they were driving Freddie Gray to central booking is, like, pretty clear. It was a lie. So this idea that Black people are supposed to wait for the facts and then get kind of chastised when we react angrily to what are very, you know, messed up facts seems like a huge trap. And it's a double standard that gets placed on the community, absolutely.
Well, I mean, speaking of double standard, we have the pumpkin riots. As we were warming up for this, you mentioned a particular incident that happened, I believe, on your campus. You have the paternal riots, at least that's what I call them. The press didn't do that. They didn't call them the paternal riots. But these students were rioting, beat up two journalists, turned over a news van, set fires, threatened police. Nobody was arrested. Nobody was arrested. And they were defending a pedophile that was preying on children in the University, I believe it was, of Pennsylvania. It turns out, because I wrote an article about this, it turns out that the Republican Party machine over there knew about this and covered it up and then tried to protect paternal. They have a riot about this, but there was no call by these, Republican, Libertarian types, the NRA types, to shoot these protesters. Mm-hmm. You know, that there was no call, you know, to have them identified as thugs. They didn't identify all white people in America. Then we have the case of Police Chief Lewis Ross. This was not too long ago. He was shot and wounded four times by a white supremacist. And it was just covered up. It was just covered up. You know, this was in Oklahoma. It was just covered up. Now, here you have a black police chief who was shot by a far-right gun-wielding. This is somebody that talks about getting rid of black people, who identifies with Nazism. His neighbors are afraid of him. Not one far-right, troll, Twitter, Facebook personality had anything to say about it. Fox News didn't discuss it other than to report that it happened and that the police supposedly made a mistake. These are double standards. And, you know, how does one deal with the sort of propaganda that Prager University is putting out with the weight that Prager University has as an institution? You know, how do African people deal with this sort of propaganda? You know, we have Fox News, you have Prager University, you have MSNBC in terms of certain personalities. You know, how are we supposed to deal with this? And where is black media in this role?
I mean, I don't know if I can answer where black media is, but I mean, right now we're on a show where it's two black people discussing this. I think that's a start. I think we need to sort of start building our own conversations outside of the frameworks of what's being offered to us, because what's being offered to us is so clearly stacked against us. And I'm a big believer in, building our own spaces and supporting each other and having things like a radio show where we can talk about this. And, I'm working on building my own website where, like, I'll be pushing sort of conversations that I think need to be happening. And we have a lot of actually, like, really great, sites like Black Agenda Report, that do sort of, have these conversations. So I think it's about building our own media and sort of not relying on those who are clearly not invested in our well-being or are in fact invested in harming us.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the real race aspects of this, the racialist aspects of this, you know, how being, you know, African and being a supporter of Zionism, when we look at what's going on to Palestinians, when we look at what's going on to Ethiopians in the state of Israel, when we look at the history of the state of Israel and the state of terrorism, you know, in the history of the state of Israel, it brings up a lot of questions when, you know, a video like this is put out by Zionists that is, totally decrying, you know, the protests, because it really wasn't about the violence. She was talking about the protest itself. And when we come back, because I think that my guest and I have a particular angle about on this, it's not being discussed. You know, we're going to talk about it when we come back. So this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and you're listening to The Angry Indian in conversation with Rebecca Pierce. Please stay tuned.
Of Palestinians. By what right would somebody who was born in Russia as a Jew all his life have greater claim in the land that belongs to a Palestinian who is driven away and now the peace process, so-called, does not allow him to return to the land of his ancestors or to recover his property? What kind of justice and what kind of international law? And why should international law be interpreted and applied in such unfair and partial way?
This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Internet Radio for smarter than smarter.
Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/HideInCopFire.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop. Really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. And it's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Hello, I'm Carol Warden. The Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center asked for your help in spreading awareness of the National Public Awareness Campaign for the availability of Plan B within Indian Health Service. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that is routinely denied to Native women at IHS facilities. Although Plan B has been available without a prescription for adult women since 2006 and as of 2009 available to women age 17 and up, it is still not provided over-the-counter at 90% of IHS pharmacies. Our goal is to ensure that Plan B is available as an over-the-counter contraceptive for all Native women and to incorporate access to Plan B into standardized sexual assault policies within IHS. We also seek to inform Native women of their right to Plan B so that they are able to make informed decisions regarding their reproductive health. Please help us get the word out. Native women are entitled to the same level of health care as all other women. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Thank you. तपाईलाई थाहा छ नेपालमा पहिलो पटक कहिले एचआईभी संक्रमित व्यक्ति फेला परेको थियो
थाहा छ सन् 1988
यतिका वर्ष बितिसक्दा एचआईभी एड्सको क्षेत्रमा के भए सकारात्मक परिवर्तनहरू कति आए कसले के गरे
के हामीले आफ्नो जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौं तपाईले गर्नुभयो
जवाफ आफैसँग खोजौ जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौं
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास
Hey, this is Ralamara.
And Donna from EPSI.
And you're listening to a...
Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Word.
This is Malachi Daniels, talking to you from New York City. You're listening to Aboriginal News, Angry Indian Radio, a place where you can come to hear what's really critical, and discussed about African people, about indigenous people, what is going on globally, where you can come and get real information This is not CNN. This is not even RT or STV. This is Aboriginal News. Come and get it.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're here with San Francisco-based filmmaker and journalist Rebecca Pierce. You can find her on Twitter at @aptly_engineered. We're going to link to her Twitter account when we publish this. And she also has a video account at Vimeo, at vimeo.com/WeirdSisterTV. Go check it out. So we're still talking about the Chloe Valdery video and trying to bring into the larger context of what's happening with this, because there's a lot of things that are not being discussed. And I'm going to try to avoid the things that we know are being talked about. But one of the things that I know is not being mentioned in terms of the racial aspects of this, because she was very careful not to say race, other than to blame, you know, a lot of the confusion on Democrats, which we've heard that before, on black people. Okay, we've heard that before. On liberals and progressives. Okay, we've heard that before too. Now, you know, the African and Ashkenazi Jewish communities in the United States have a long history, you know, and, you know, that's been said and that's been argued, and the Klan came after us both. But what really gets me about the Prager video and about Chloe Valdery in general, now, I don't know if she's Jewish or not, but as I said on the last dispatch, as somebody who is of African and Ashkenazi descent, you know, I find it really funny how someone can support Zionism, and, you know, bring that up, because Prager University is very heavy about that. Dennis Prager is very heavy about this, right? He's a Zionist and he doesn't apologize for it. Okay, all well and good. But, I mean, was the Warsaw Ghetto, this is what I asked, was the Warsaw Ghetto then, you know, wrong? Was any resistance then put up by Jews in Europe wrong? You know, I mean, where's this coming from? And, you know, Rebecca Pierce, you know, let me ask you on the air, do you identify as Jewish?
Yeah, absolutely.
African and Jewish. Yeah. So like myself, you know, it's just, you know, it's part of our upbringing. I mean, that aspect of the Prager involvement in something like this to denounce and decry and use very slick propaganda to undermine the progress that has been made, in terms of charges finally being brought against these officers, in terms of getting the state of emergency eliminated, in terms of getting federal government attention placed on this, even though it's not the attention that we want. You know, as a Jew and as a black person in the United States, with the racism that we're experiencing here, and with the racism we see our African brothers and sisters experiencing in Israel, you know, what runs through your mind when you see these sorts of things and you hear these arguments being made?
Well, I think this is all like really, really complex. And, you know, I can't really speak for Chloe necessarily, obviously, but from what I understand, she has definitely described herself as philo-Semitic, and I think sees herself as an ally of the Jewish people. Mm. And a lot of people sort of see allyship with the Jewish people as supporting Zionism, supporting Israel, a lot of times without much question. And for me, having lived in both the United States and Israel, I see both of those countries as having, you know, very similar problems when it comes to racism, militarism, mistreatment of both immigrants and indigenous peoples. And for me, you know, unquestioning support for that isn't solidarity. It's something quite different. And I think there is a reason that we see a lot of these pro-Israel groups sort of seizing on things like Ferguson, because there is both connections that are being made between people on the ground. Like when you had Palestinians in the West Bank tweeting tear gas advice to black people in Ferguson. And there's also like structurally just very similar sort of tactics being used against people in both places. So it does make sense that there is this sort of bridge being built between Zionism and, you know, the foundational white supremacy that the United States is built on. So that doesn't really surprise me at all. I think what does really disturb me is to see that people will sort of do this while claiming to be in solidarity with both black and Jewish people. Because for me, that's nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I've written about this as well, where in the African community, you know, where we have our own fascism, mm-hmm. and you have copies of the protocols that Yale designed that are still being sold mm-hmm. and passed around. And, you know, conspiracies about the Jewish-led Illuminati, bringing the communists into, I mean, you hear black people regurgitating these things. And then when I show them directly where they come from, you know, the Klan, the John Birch Society, the various, you know, neo-Nazi, incarnations that have still remain in the United States, and they don't want to believe it. So how, as a black person, as a Jewish person, as an aware person, how do you deal with this and then look at the controversy now that's being brought up by Prager University? Because I know, I haven't heard it yet, but I know there's going to be some radical brothers out there who consider themselves to be enlightened, who are going to say that this is proof of a Jewish conspiracy against the black community, because Prager University is a Jewish campus, and that they support the state of Israel. And they're going to start making these cockeyed connections. So, you know, what can people like you and I do about this in terms of, you know, being able to articulate this and being able to articulate it in such a way that, you know, will be at least, you know, somewhat considered, mm-hmm. if not listened to?
Well, I think it's really important that people like you and I own both our black and Jewish identities and sort of say that these things do happen at the same time. And, like, you know, for me, they're completely intertwined. So that's a big start, because I think the idea of black people as Jews gets erased across the board. So first, yeah, just owning that identity. I think I'm always really quick when I see someone spouting any type of anti-Semitic, homophobic, anti-black garbage to, you know, approach them either publicly or privately and explain why I have a problem with that. It doesn't always make me popular. There are definitely even people in the Palestine Solidarity Movement who, you know, won't talk to me anymore, in part because I've been pretty critical of this kind of thing. But I think it's really important to be principled when it comes to that. And then also, you know, turning around, and when we see these sort of connections being made between Zionism and, you know, white supremacy in the U.S., a strong critique of that. And I think when you do those three things, you're sort of able to build a foundation that is, you know, can really stand up to some of the sort of weird, baseless things that get passed around in any community.
Yeah, because we've seen this with the Ma'afa 21 thing, where that, you know, they've taken the Ma'afa, which is, you know, the African Holocaust here in the United States, well, in the Americas, I should say, because it wasn't just the United States. They've taken that, added 21 to it, which, of course, will, you know, take, you know, get the attention of a lot of, you know, Afrocentric-minded people, because they see Ma'afa, and then they look at it and, oh, well, Planned Parenthood is trying to wipe out the black community, and Margaret Sanger had a plot. I mean, I just got into it with someone on Twitter this morning about this. You know, we're hit with so much ridiculous information, and then here's the other thing I wanted to ask you, if I can, the question of leadership. Now, we hear a lot of, you know, really just ridiculous comments. So, you know, from the mother who was disciplining her son, you know, you got the right commending her, and you got the left kind of commending her, and then, you know, people on the right condemning her for striking him. And then, you know, I've had black men get into arguments with me already this week saying that she demasculized him. You know, I mean, she completely, you know, feminized him in front of the white world on this. You know, there's so much nonsense that's being pumped out. And then you have this Chloe Valdery video, which tries to come across as sane as possible. You know, what's the best way to articulate this to somebody who is really not comprehending the argument that we're making, that, you know, this is taking advantage of a really unfortunate situation to push a racialist agenda?
Well, I think that that's always hard, and it's going to really depend on, you know, who your audience is and what the exact context is. I mean, when it comes to, you know, the video of the mother and her son, for me, that was like, what's often like a very private moment of black pain, where like parents are trying to find some way to deal with their kids, but are also doing so in a way that's like really harmful, and it's made public and it's turned into a joke. Mm-hmm. And I think sort of talking about like, that mother and her son are both people. They're both, like, obviously not perfect. And for us to sort of treat this as something to consume is actually really wrong. So that's how I would address that particular thing. when it comes to these, and it's not about whether he's getting emasculated. It's about, like, this is, like, a problem in the Black community. We do have issues with, like, corporal punishment. And turning that into a cartoon or a meme, isn't helping anyone. In fact, it's harming us. When it comes to this, like, video, I think we kind of need to look at, like, you know, how, in what ways is this, or what is this saying about the Black community? And is this something that we want to be said about us? And does this, like, reflect our reality at all? And for me, the answer is, like, very clearly no. And sort of, like, we need to deal with the fact that, like, there's going to be, you know, a huge spectrum of opinions in the Black community. And a lot of people outside who have their own agendas will lift up one of us to sort of say, well, this is how Black people should be acting or thinking. And that's also wrong. That's also, you know, it's tokenizing, and it's also really patronizing to the rest of the Black community who's being sort of told, well, you should listen to her and ignore the, like, you know, the real facts on the ground that you're living with. So that would sort of be my answer to that.
Yeah, because I'm really tired of, you know, being lectured to about the Reverend Al Sharpton, because this has nothing to do with him, you know.
Exactly. It shouldn't.
It shouldn't. You know, I mean, they really don't have anything to say. And that's why I find what she did to be really offensive, because I understood exactly what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a final question, you know, what would you say to these Africans out here who feel that by supporting these sorts of movements by white radicals, because that's what they are, that they're not normal thinking Caucasians, you know, they're not, well, as Dr. King said, these are our sick white brothers. But those of us who are of color, be they Latino, be they Asian, Native, what would you say to someone like Chloe? Because, you know, she already cut me off online, and she didn't want to discuss anything when I asked her a pertinent question. You know, what do we say to these people who think that somehow, if by helping out the most racist elements in America, like Alan West or Larry Elder, you know, or Dr. King's niece, you know, do they feel that they're going to be immune when they really start coming after us? I mean, we're Black and Jewish. You know, are we really supposed to sit and believe that? You know, and the Jews in this country, do they really believe that, the Klan and what have you, and these Christian Zionists like Anders Breivik are not going to come after them after a while? You know, what is going through the mind, you think? And how should we deal with people of color who are coming from a position that they really want to be white supremacists and just can't come out and say it?
Well, you know, I think, I have, like, you know, Black Tea Party members in my own family, and certainly, like, butted heads with them. And I think at the end of the day, my personal approach, I'm not gonna try and push this on anyone, because it's hard enough for me to do, but is to say, you know what, you're entitled to, like, feel how you feel, to support what you support. I'm going to vehemently disagree with you when you're saying things that are false. I will, you know, definitely challenge that. Don't expect to go unchallenged in this. But also, like, I try to be as open and loving as I can in a way, and say, you know what, like, if there's a time when comes, or when you can see the way that this is harmful, you know, you're always welcome back. And I don't have a, and if you're willing to, like, engage critically, I'd love to have a conversation. And that's how I would talk to, like, another Black person on this level. I'm not gonna, you know, necessarily address everyone coming out of that, perspective in that way. But I think that, like, I like to keep the door open for, like, further conversation, just to try and to poke some sort of holes in this ideology that people have built up around themselves.
Okay, so we've been speaking. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a question that I've been asking people. You know, it's like, how do we really address this? Because to not challenge it, mm-hmm. and to be passive is to allow things to get worse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I find that nine times out of ten, when you have somebody that's really, really big and wants you to know about it, it's because they're really goddamn insecure. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask them, what is your problem?
Yeah.
And it always usually comes down to, well, you know, Black people are not kissing my ass when I come down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting respect. I'm white. You know, and it's like, nobody's forgetting about you. You've lost nothing.
Yeah.
You know, what is your problem? So, you know, that's the white guy. You can kind of understand where they're coming from because of the history here. And there's a psychology that goes along with colonialism.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, you've lived in Israel. You understand that. But when someone of color is going to make an argument that is being made by Pam Geller, by Bill O'Reilly, by Sean Hannity, by Ted Nugent. How can you possibly take them seriously?
Well, I think, like, you know, you don't necessarily have to personally buy into any of it. But, like, look, I've, like, having lived in Israel, you meet a lot of people who are, you know, Jewish of, like, Middle Eastern origin or Jewish of African origin. And they'll say and believe things that personally, like, I find shocking and offensive. But at the same time, I understand how, like, a lot of that is things that they're sort of, you know, put in a position where they feel like they have to say it in order to prove that they belong in a society that ultimately rejects them. Mm-hmm. And so as much as I disagree, as much as, like, it hurts me to see them get involved in situations where, like, you know, they may be acting as an occupation soldier, harming Palestinians, I try to have some empathy. And knowing that that empathy is also a privilege in some ways, but I try to have empathy and understand that, like, those people are still my, like, brothers and sisters, even if I find, you know, a lot of their beliefs and actions abhorrent. And people don't just wake up and start acting like that. You know, it's coming from a very real set of experiences that I try to understand. And personally, like, that's something I know I'm able to do. I know a lot of people who wouldn't be able to do that, and I, like, respect that too, because, like, it wears down on me a lot, you know? But I just try to keep the perspective of openness to people until there's something where, like, you know, there are certain lines that I just can't really, like, allow to be crossed. But, you know, I try to be open because a lot of times, like, these people are hurting. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's an honest and that's a human answer. And I could only hope that, you know, those who think that we're such a problem and want to do harm to us, you know, actually heard what you had to say and will be a little more considerate when they're trying to, you know, get their, whatever their point is across. Cause that, as far as I'm concerned, they really don't have a point. They're simply speaking from fear. And, you know, Rebecca, it's been really great having you on.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
And check her out on vimeo.com/WeirdSisterTV. That's all one word. And we're going to link to it at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. So, you know, I hope you, you know, really listen to what she had to say and, you know, give that, you know, a little bit of perspective, because personally, I don't have a whole lot of patience with dealing with bigots, you know. So, you know, she gave me a little something to think about, and I hope she, you know, gave you at least something that would give you a little pause. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
A large organizational infrastructure to get people into the groups and then to coordinate their conditioning. I find all of this very interesting, but also a little depressing. I cannot help but agree with Bernice and Elul that the governing role of propaganda is inevitable in a modern, centralized, technological society. Without propaganda as a coordinator for the lemmings, we would have chaos. The only way to avoid propaganda would be to return to the sort of decentralized society without mass media, based on the farm and the village that we had during the Middle Ages and in ancient times. And we can't do that as long as we live in a world where we are surrounded by dangerous enemies, which is to say we cannot afford decentralization and the giving up of our mass communications capabilities as long as we have Chinese or Jews waiting for us to lower our vigilance. The important thing is not to try to avoid propaganda. We really can't do that. But to ensure that the people who control the content and the direction of the propaganda are our people and that they have the right motivations. That is the essential thing. Beside this, everything else becomes insignificant. An understanding of our present situation leads to a conclusion that many otherwise intelligent people are afraid to confront. That frightening conclusion is that there is no peaceful way out of this situation. The Jews never will voluntarily relinquish control of the mechanism of propaganda, and as long as they retain control, America and our civilization and our people will continue down the slippery slope toward oblivion. Non-white immigration will continue. The white birth rate will remain far below the replacement level. The media will continue pushing multiculturalism and race mixing, and the Jews will continue their efforts to reduce our freedom to a choice of hair curlers and ball games, as they already have done in Norway. And as long as their television screens stay lit and the shelves at the shopping malls remain full of consumer goods, the lemmings will go along happily with everything. We cannot vote our way out of our planned demise. Either we will let ourselves be led into extinction by the masters of propaganda like lambs to the slaughter, or we will fight back. And when we fight back, there will be a period of bloody chaos. When I have said this in the past, I have been accused by people who otherwise agreed with me of having bloody-minded fantasies. They did not want to face the prospect of violence and bloodshed. And when I said that we must face it, they accused me of wanting it. Well, I don't want it, except as an alternative that is infinitely preferable to extinction. I prefer a peaceful path to survival and freedom and progress. But I no longer believe that a peaceful path remains for us. The people who accused me of being bloody-minded were people who were comfortable, who were living fairly high on the hog. And of course, they didn't want their comfort to end. They didn't want their comfortable world to become chaotic and dangerous and bloody. I can't blame them for that. But they let their desire for a continuation of comfort hide the truth from them. They wanted to believe that we can vote our way out of the mess we're in and that everything can be resolved peacefully, and so that's what they believed. I can only agree with Professor Elul that the worst thing we can do now is entertain any illusions about the efficacy of democracy in combating the destructive propaganda mechanism being used against us by the Jews. In this regard, I should mention the current situation in France. Tomorrow is the runoff voting in the French presidential election. Many people in the United States are very excited by the fact that the conservative French nationalist Jean-Marie Le Pen came in second in the voting 2 weeks ago. And the Jews in France have been denouncing him as an anti-Semite and demonstrating in the streets against him ever since. Almost certainly the winner in tomorrow's voting will be the corrupt system politician Jacques Chirac. We must remember that France doesn't have the two-party system that we have in the United States. The vote is divided among a number of competing parties, and Le Pen won second place 2 weeks ago with less than 17% of the vote, while the frontrunner, Chirac, received less than 20%. Tomorrow, Chirac will win with something between 70 and 80% of the vote. But even if Le Pen were to beat Chirac tomorrow, it certainly wouldn't mean beating the Jews. For the Jews, it's a win-win situation. If Chirac wins, he will continue taking money and orders from the Jews, as he has in the past. If Le Pen wins, it will be a setback for some Jewish policies. But probably the first thing Le Pen will do is begin kicking Arabs out of France. And it is the Arabs in France, brought there by Jewish anti-racist immigration policies, who have been in the forefront of attacks on synagogues and Jewish businesses in France in recent months. Le Pen certainly will not begin kicking Jews out of France. The man running his current electoral campaign, Bruno Gollnisch, is a Jew, as are several other key members of Le Pen's National Front Party. Le Pen's own son-in-law is a Jew. Jewish propaganda in France, as elsewhere, has set the limits for permissible political behavior, and Le Pen will act only within those limits. There remains the fact that Le Pen did surprise most observers by winning second place 2 weeks ago. And people in America who desperately want to believe that we can vote our way out of our mess here are grasping at that fact like a drowning man grasping at a straw. But really, what Le Pen's surge in popularity proves is not that democracy has a chance, but that surprises do happen. That is what should give us hope, that even with their stranglehold on the propaganda media in America, the Jews can and do miscalculate, and unforeseen events do happen. Our responsibility here is to continue building our capability for taking advantage of surprises when they do happen. And that means primarily to continue building our means for communicating effectively with every independent-minded white man and woman with a conscience and attempting to gain his or her participation in the effort to reach others. I don't expect that our communications capability will win any elections for us, but it certainly will enhance our ability to fight back. And that is what I intend to do until my last breath. Thanks for being with me again today.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This is FSNL reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the seven generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
दोपहर को कहाँ गई थी?
दोपहर को बाजार गई थी।
पता क्यों नहीं जा सकती थी?
अरे अब इसकी क्या बताना?
पड़ोसियों से पता चलता है मुझे।
पता चले तो क्या हुआ?
चुप! ये घर मैं चलाता हूँ। मुझसे पूछे बगैर कोई काम नहीं होगा इस घर में। चल चला समझ।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Only 28% of Americans believe in evolution.
62% want creation science taught along with evolution in our schools.
44% want creation science taught exclusively.
You are all about to learn that you didn't come from monkeys and slime. All of you were created in the image and likeness of God.
But didn't we evolve from prior organisms?
Yes, we did. Those organisms were named Adam and Eve.
Then why do we share 99% of our DNA with chimpanzees?
The Bible doesn't teach about chimpanzees.
What about redundant DNA and junk DNA? Does the Bible teach about that?
Well, I can tell you one thing. There's no redundant DNA in hell.
Our children are our future.
Let's try not to turn them into dangerous idiots.
Oh.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And we'll talk about they don't hate anyone and they don't wish to see people maybe being killed. They say those things publicly because it sounds good for the camera. But when the cameras are shut off, members of organized white supremacist groups do sit around plotting to kill people, talk about assassinating people and blowing up buildings.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. Aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
This ends our news flash.
Bad luck down here. All I know is that you better bring some trucks around here. Wonder why I got my middle finger up around here. People lives on the line, you declining to help. Since you taking so much time, we surviving ourselves. Just me and my pets and my kids and my spouse. Trapped in my own house, looking for a way out.
Tell them that we need to get out of here.
5 days in this motherfucking attic. Can't use the cell phone, I keep getting static. Dying cause they lying instead of telling us the truth. Other day the helicopters got my neighbors off the roof. It's cool cause they said they coming back for us too. That was 3 days ago, I don't see no rescue. See a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do.